So we're working our way through Jeremiah, and can I just ask you, how many of you have seen this book in a new way as we've gone through this? Have you gone, man, I never really thought about it this way? Good, because I have too. I don't remember who it was, but somebody was saying to me that, you know, they look at this now and they go, Jeremiah was a real guy. Like, it's not just the name of a prophet in the book. Like, this was a real dude. Like, he did stuff. He preached. He got, you know, beaten down. He got discouraged. And it's important that we see that. Evil's real. It's not a shocking statement, but it's truth. Evil is real. The source of evil, Satan himself, is real. To deny that there is evil is to live in a fantasy world. Really. I mean, if you say, man, there's no such thing as evil, you're dreaming. And I think that there's been evil all throughout history. We can see that. You can read the history books and see that there's been evil all along. But I think the 20th century really brought evil into the spotlight. And I think the reason for that, you know, in previous generations, they heard about the horrors of, you know, dictators, people on the other side of the world, kings, and just evil people. They heard about it. But in the 20th century, it ushered in radio, and then TV, and fast forward to the internet, and to, you know, it's just everywhere, our phones. And we have this new acquaintance with evil. It's just in our face all the time. You can hear about things that happen instantly. And where in previous generations, you know, they'd hear about it and it could have happened months and months ago, now we hear it in real time. And we hear all of it. We're inundated with what is happening around the world. Why would God allow leaders like Stalin or Pol Pot or Hitler or Kim Jong-il or all these other dictators? Why would he allow them to take control? Why would he allow these guys to take leadership in a country and then perform the evil acts that they did? I mean, if you go through and you read about some of these men that God put in leadership, in Russia, millions of peasants, I think they were called kulaks or something like that. There's actually a movie coming out about, them in, sometime this spring, I think. But they were exiled, all these peasants were exiled to Siberia to die of starvation and exposure. Millions. In North Korea, millions have been imprisoned, they've been tortured, they've been executed. In China, starting with the overthrow of the government and its changeover to communism, millions of Chinese died at the hands of their own nation's leaders. And then if you look at our own country, I mean, we certainly don't have dictators like that, but it often seems like godless people who have the most money get the last word. I get the last word on issues pertaining to God. And I think about our country and the fact that abortion is allowed. That it's allowed. And even with the technology that allows us to see into the womb and observe the growth of a life from just a few weeks, a heart beating, the fact that we can see that and go, that's not human. That's not a life. The fact that people can see that and still deny it tells me that evil is alive and well. Only evil could blind someone's eyes to that. You know what really irks me? I read a blog this week, and someone was commenting on the Grammys. Grammys, right? Guess you the Grammys? Yeah! No, I'm just kidding. So he's commenting on the Grammys, and I guess Beyonce's pregnant. I don't know. Like, we care, right? But so she's pregnant, and this guy was commenting on the fact that everyone's, you know, that, you know, I guess in the music industry is like, oh, Beyonce is pregnant, and she's going to have a baby. There's a baby inside her. And suddenly, because it's Beyonce, what's in her womb has life. But anybody, you know, nobody else that's pregnant that, you know, might want to get an abortion, well, that's not a baby. But because it's Beyonce, she's got a name, and she's got money, and she's celebrity, so suddenly that's a little person with a future. Makes no sense. The American conscience has been so seared. You know, evil just doesn't even, we don't see it, we're blinded. We are a world of double standards, but no one can seem to see it. And this blindness, though, doesn't just pertain to, you know, people out there. Because we're blind to our own issues too. One of God's greatest complaints, as we've gone through this book of Jeremiah, one of his greatest complaints about his people is that they would worship in the temple, and they'd bring sacrifices, and they would say all the right things, and then they would leave the temple, and they would just live like everyone else. It's called hypocrisy. And God told them, he says, trouble is coming because of this, because of your hypocrisy. And when it comes, God tells them this, he says, when it comes, you're going to go, help, help, but I won't listen. So he's told them all this, and when we get into Jeremiah, we read that they act surprised when these things actually happen. Trouble comes, and they go, help, help, and God doesn't come, and they go, why isn't God listening? God told them all this. I want you to think about our own nation for a moment. Our own nation. History repeats itself. Don't forget that. History repeats itself over and over. No matter where you live or how enlightened you think you are, okay? History is going to repeat itself. Every nation, every generation, every civilization thinks that they're going to get it right. But you know what? They do the same thing that previous generations did. Millions of Christians claim, or millions of Americans claim to be Christians. They say they believe in God. Some of them even go to church. The Tri-County Times this morning, the Fenton newspaper, said that 75% of the nation of Germany claims to be Christian. I'm like, ha, right? Not so. That's like saying 80% of Americans are Christians. Not so. Millions of Americans claim to be Christians, but their lives look no different than someone who doesn't believe in God, but maybe acts morally. That's our nation. And then something tragic happens and everyone is going, why, God? Why would you let this happen? And they don't see their hypocrisy. They don't see that they're claiming to be something and not acting like it. And then bad things happen and they go, come on, God, why aren't you here for us? They don't see it. There's the facade that they put up versus the life they actually live. And I'm telling you, a day of judgment is coming and people worldwide are going to be so confused. They're going to be so confused because they will have spent their whole lives going, yeah, I'm a Christian, I believe in God, and then God's going to bring judgment, and they're going to go, I don't understand. Why is this happening? Because they don't see their hypocrisy because evil has blinded their eyes. Turn to Jeremiah chapter 12. Because, see, Jeremiah is seeing this happen in his nation. He's seeing this very thing. People claiming to be godly, and they're not living like it, and judgment's coming, and they're going, why, God, why would you do this to us? And so, he's gotta bring this to God. He's gotta complain a little bit. Cause it's not just that. It's that it seems that evil is being victorious. It seems like evil is on top. Alright, look at verse 1. Chapter 12. He says, righteous are you, O Lord, when I complain to you. Yet I would plead my case before you. Jeremiah's got a complaint. Here's the historical background. What is the situation right now? Why does Jeremiah have a complaint? Okay, well, first of all, Josiah was king. He was a good king. He was a godly king. It was good. It was good for the nation. And then he went out and he got killed in battle. Good king. Good guy. Loved God. He got killed. And then this guy named Jehoahaz took the throne. Yeah, how'd you like that name? Yeah. And he was evil. And so Pharaoh defeated him and put this guy named Jehoiakim on the throne. That was Josiah's son. Remember, Josiah was a good king. Jehoiakim was not. He was a bad king. And so Jeremiah is watching all this unfold and he's like, God, you had this awesome king, Josiah. Good guy. Loved you. But he dies, and then just 4 short months later, we've got Jehoiakim, who could care less, who's evil, who doesn't care about you. Why would you do that? And then, not only that, but Jeremiah is preaching in his hometown of Anathoth, okay? That's not Anathoth with a lisp, just so you know, it's Anathoth, okay? And the men of Anathoth, now that I say it, it sounds like I have a lisp, but Anathoth, I'll stop. Okay. This is where Jeremiah is from. He's from that city that I just mentioned. It's also the city of priests. Okay? And so he's preaching and he's prophesying, and you know what they tell him? They say, Jeremiah, you preach again. You say that one more time. You tell us judgment's coming one more time, and we're just gonna kill you. This is his hometown. These are his people. These are his brothers. This is his father. These are people that know him and should love him. They say, you speak out again and we're gonna kill you. And so when we get to chapter 12, a good king has died and there's evil in its place. Jeremiah has been kicked out of his hometown and people are telling him they're going to kill him. So he's got reason to complain. He says, Lord, what is going on? So he starts off with this. He says, righteous are you, O Lord, when I complain to you. He says, God, you're righteous. Meaning, Lord, you always do what's right. He's simply stating a fact. Lord, you are right. You're always right. In the courts, if you went to court on everything you did, you'd come out on top. You would win the court case. When I complain, he says, I never win. But I'm going to state my case anyway. But you know what? That's exactly why you can complain to God. Because he's right all the time. And you can say, well, here's what's going on. I just gotta get it off my chest. I just gotta tell you this. I know you're right. I know you've got, you know what's going on here, but I just have to tell you. God is ultimately going to do what's right. And Jeremiah knows that God does what is right. He doesn't do things on a whim. God doesn't have a flavor of the month, okay? He does what's right all the time. And so whatever's going on, you can take it to him and trust that he's going to do what's right. And even though Jeremiah knows this, even though Jeremiah knows that God is in control, he still wants to say his piece. Josiah was a good king. Now he's dead and evil people are in charge. There is a way to approach God with our concerns and our complaints. There's a way to do it. There's a right way to open the dialogue with God. Start by affirming what you know to be true. God, you are righteous. God, you are holy. God, you are good. God, you are just. Start there. Start by affirming what you know to be true. Now, our faith doesn't mean that we have no questions about what God is doing. If anything, our faith brings more questions to the surface. You ever ask a question that brings up 10 more? That happens when I'm teaching in groups, you know, we'll say one thing and then someone's like, well, what about this? And then what about, and pretty soon we're off and we're answering 10 other questions. It's like working in an old house. You've probably heard me say this or you heard my father-in-law say it. You know, swing a hammer and 10 things go wrong. That's how it is with questions. You ask one question, 10 more rise to the surface. But what happens is the more we learn about God, the more we learn about who He is, what He does, the more we realize how little we know. Right? You start learning things about God, and you're like, oh great, I've got that down, and then you realize, oh man, that just uncovered a whole bunch of other stuff I have no clue about. If you have confusion about God, if you have confusion about what He's doing, take it to Him. That's what people of faith do, that's what Jeremiah did. And so he swings between saying, thus says the Lord! And then asking God, what in the world is going on? That's okay. That's okay. You're allowed to do that. You can go here and you can read it and declare God's truth and then the next day go, I don't understand what's happening. And God can handle that. And we've all been there, right? One day you're like, okay, this is good. I got this. I'm understanding this. And the next day, your mind is blown. And I can do that in my life. I can stand up here and declare God's truth to you on Sunday and then wake up Monday morning going, ugh, I don't know what is happening. What are you doing, God? So let me ask you, what is the case that you might bring to God? Jeremiah had one. Maybe you've got one. Well, let's look at what he says. Let's look at what he says. What is the case that Jeremiah brings against God? This is the question. Verse 1, why does the way of the wicked prosper? Why do all who are treacherous thrive? You plant them and they take root. They grow and produce fruit. So his question to God is, what are you doing? It looks like you made the wicked to prosper. There was a good king who died and a terrible one took his place. Why do the wicked win? Why do the treacherous thrive? It does appear that evil people get good things in life sometimes, doesn't it? Doesn't it sometimes seem like the wicked are on top, they're winning? They seem to be getting away with the things that they're doing. And Jeremiah, boy, he really takes it to the next level with verse 2. Because he doesn't just say, hey, it looks like the wicked are winning. He says, God, it seems like you planted them and that they just, you planted them like a little plant, a little seedling, and they just took off. Now they're producing fruit. You did that, God. It's not enough, he says, that evil seems to prosper, God, but it actually feels like you were a part of it. And that kind of bothers me, God. That's what Jeremiah is saying here. The ungodly seem to be placed in power by God. You know, he could stop at any time he wanted. I think that's part of Jeremiah's point. You planted them. You put these evil people in power. You could just stop it with the snap of your fingers. Do you realize that every evil thing that happens in this world could be stopped in an instant? It could be. I mean, it could be right now. God could just say, all right, enough. Evil's done. He could end it right now. But he couldn't do it without violating his plan for salvation. He couldn't do it without violating the personal autonomy you have, personal freedom, okay? Now, I don't mean free will or complete autonomy. I just mean the personal freedom we have to make choices. He could end it right now, but not without violating those things. But the personal freedom that we have to make choices reflects God's image, and he won't crush that. I don't say that to make you angry at God. If you're going, well, if he could end it right now, then why doesn't he? Well, those are two really good reasons why he doesn't. He had a plan for salvation, and it's working itself out, and it's coming to completion one day. But I want you to know that evil does not have the last word. It often looks like evil will win. There's going to be a point in time where it really is going to look like evil has won. When a ruler takes over the entire world, you read the book of Revelation, you see what this person's going to do, it's going to feel like evil has finally won. It's like it feels like you're in the fourth quarter, you're down by 3 touchdowns, and there's no possible way that you can win. And anyone watching would say, this game is over. They'll leave the stadium. They'll gripe about the game, and they'll completely miss the comeback that's happening out on the field. That's evil. Evil's winning. It's the fourth quarter. They're up by several touchdowns. There's no way. But they're gonna fail. You know, in our world, we watch Hollywood continue to earn billions and billions of dollars by creating garbage. Just complete garbage. We watch corporations rape and pillage the earth. Their CEOs are multi-billionaires. Politicians lie. They make backroom deals. They make tons of money at our expense. You've got human traffickers and drugs and religious persecution and everything else going on. And for most of them, it seems like they get away with it. But not forever. Not forever. Let's keep reading here. Look at the second half of verse 2. Another argument from Jeremiah. He says, you plant them, they take root. They grow and they produce fruit. You are near in their mouth, but far from their heart. He says, the wicked are in power, and they talk about you, but they don't love you. They talk about you, and they say your name, but it's lip service only. Your lips honor me, but your hearts are far from me, is the idea here. We can't be those kind of people, guys. Our lips have to match our hearts. Our lips have to match. You know, if I said all kinds of sweet things to Jody, all the while, you know, disrespecting her in other ways, you know, I could say I loved her all day long. But, you know, if I didn't, you know, I'm going to end that right there. You got the point, okay? I'm not getting myself in trouble this morning. She knows what I mean. You know what I mean. Okay. But it's typical politicians. It's typical political speech. They refer to God in their speeches, but they don't know anything of real submission to him. I'm tired of hearing people that I know don't love God saying, God bless America, at the end of their speeches. I say, really? Do you really expect God to bless America after what you just said? It sounds good at the end of a speech. I guess I don't know how else you end it, right? You know, POTUS out, or, thanks for listening, or message complete. That's what we get from the school. They're like, you know, blah, blah, blah about the school, message complete. And they're like, oh, okay, I guess I hang up now. You know, it's the same with the Pledge of Allegiance, right? Pledge of Allegiance. In the middle of the pledge, we say, one nation under God. And I'm not saying that we should take it out, but I do think that maybe fewer people should state it with confidence. You know? Yeah, one nation under God. It's like, no, maybe you should just skip that part because you don't really believe it. They talk like you're in their life, but their hearts are empty, is what Jeremiah is saying. And we can't be those kind of people, and yet we see it all around us. Look at verse 3. He's starting to turn a corner here. He says, but you, O Lord, know me. There's a contrast here. He says, but you know me, God. I'm with you. These people, these evil people that it seems like you put in power, yeah, they're messed up. They say things about you. They talk about you, but they don't really know you. But you know me, God. You know me. You see, there's a lot of people who are going to say God's name and they're going to act like they know God, but it's not really whether they know God. It's whether God knows you. Okay, and Jeremiah, he gets it. He's like, it doesn't matter what people say, you know, they're saying, they're giving you lip service, but you know me, I'm with you, God. And he says, you see me and you test my heart toward you. Then he gets a little dark, because he's upset. He says, pull them out like sheep for the slaughter, and set them apart for the day of slaughter. You think he's upset? A little bit. How long will the land mourn, verse 4, and the grass of every field wither, for the evil of those who dwell in it? For the beasts and birds are swept away because they said, he will not see our latter end. He says, take these jokers outside and wipe them out. How long will you let their evil go on? So here's Jeremiah, okay? Because he was obedient to God, his life is being threatened. His leaders were evil. He's upset. Do you know the people who have the most genuine heart for God and are really trying to serve him often suffer the most? The ones who are most sincere, the ones whose hearts are most devoted to God often suffer the most. I could, you know, we could do a long history lesson of guys, ladies who have suffered for God because of what they did. Their heart was sincere, they were trying to serve. Just one quick example. How many of you heard the name William Tyndale? Okay, good. He's known for being the first English speaker to translate the Bible from Greek into English. And you know when he did it? It was not allowed. And it wasn't just the king that was saying no, it was the church. Figure that one out, right? The king and the head of the Church of England forbade him to do any further translation on pain of death. And he was betrayed. You know who betrayed him? A clergyman. Pastor. Betrayed him to authorities. And he was arrested. He spent a year in prison, and then he was strangled to death at the stake and then burned at the same stake for translating the Bible into a language people could understand. He was genuine, good heart, really trying to serve, but he undergoes suffering at the hands of evil men. You know, we don't understand most of the time what God is doing and why he's allowing certain things, but we know that he's righteous. Going back to verse 1, we know that he's righteous. And ultimately, in a way we can't understand, God is bringing glory to himself through the way he deals with evil. So Jeremiah says, God, just eliminate them. Drag them out like sheep to be slaughtered. It's like, you know, the sheep are walking by and they're going, oh, this is a good one. Boom, grab the sheep, pull them over here, slit it, gut it, whatever, it's done. Just drag them out. But you know, God is not always so quick to address evil. All those dictators I mentioned, they reigned for a long time. It wasn't like they were flash in the pan 2 months and they killed a lot of people. Some of them ruled for 20, 30 years. But here's one thing we didn't mention. They're all dead. And in some cases, their regimes collapsed. And if they haven't, they will. So God answers Jeremiah's complaint, and it is not in the way that you would expect. Look at verse 5. He says, if you've raced with men on foot and they have wearied you, how will you compete with the horses? And if in a safe land you are so trusting, what will you do in the thicket of the Jordan? For even your brothers in the house of your father, even they have dealt treacherously with you. They are in full cry after you. Do not believe them, though they speak friendly words to you. What is God's response here? It's basically this. You haven't seen anything yet. He says, if you got tired running with men, what are you going to do when the horses show up? If you're running with the foot soldiers, wait until the horse soldiers show up. If you get tired walking through the woods, wait until you're walking through a muck-filled marsh. Then it's really going to get hard. Yeah, you got kicked out of your town, your own family betrayed you and wants to kill you, but there's more to come. How's that for encouragement? Yeah, you get ready for some real pain, Jeremiah. What? God, I'm down. I'm getting kicked to death. And God's like, well, just wait, because there's a guy about to do a flying elbow drop off the top turnbuckle, right? That was the first thing I thought of when I was doing this. I was thinking of wrestling moves, you know? When I was a little kid in the 80s, man, WWF. That was when it was the WWF, okay? Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock, WWF come on, and I'd be watching these guys. I probably never heard of them, but like Bret the Hitman Hart, Greg the Hammer Valentine, Junkyard Dog, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, remember him? Big John Stud. No? Okay, well anyway, these guys, the way wrestling works, and they do it today too, they're still doing it, they work these guys down until they're on the mat and they do their finishing move. Always had their finishing move, their, you know, finish the guy off. Randy Macho Man Savage would get up on the top rope and he'd go, and then he would jump and he would do a flying elbow on the, across their chest. Jimmy Superfly did a headbutt or he'd do a splash across their whole body. Then there was the Jake the Snake. Remember him? The DDT. You'd get him in a headlock and he'd go boom, ram their head into the mat. So here's the deal. Too much TV? That was back in the day. So Jeremiah is down on the mat. He's moaning. He's been beat down. And Jimmy Superfly is about to do a splashdown on him. And God says, trust me. Trust me. You need to trust me. See, the days we live in are so deceptive. We think living in this world is difficult, but it's nothing compared to what some Christians are enduring around the world, or what Christians have endured throughout history, or what Christians will endure when the end is upon us. And we need to trust God. And He's asking, if you're worn out from dealing with humans, okay, what are you going to do when things really get bad? He doesn't tell Jeremiah, I'll rescue you right before your people get destroyed. No, He doesn't promise any easy path out of this. He says it'll get worse. And guess what? Jeremiah has a front row seat for when Babylon comes and wipes out his people and carries them off into captivity. Front row seat. But God says, don't get tired. I will take care of this mess. I see it. I don't like it. And I will judge it. How do we know that? Take a look at verse 7. He switches gears. First is his answer to Jeremiah that, hey, it's going to get worse. But then in verse 7 he says, I have forsaken my house. I have abandoned my heritage. I have given the beloved of my soul into the hands of her enemies. My heritage has come to me like a lion in the forest. She has lifted up her voice against me. Therefore I hate her. Is my heritage to me like a hyena's lair? Are the birds of prey against her all around? Go, assemble all the wild beasts. Bring them to devour. Many shepherds have destroyed my vineyard. They've trampled down my portion. They have made my pleasant portion a desolate wilderness. They've made it a desolation. Desolate, it mourns to me. The whole land is made desolate, but no man lays it to heart. Upon all the bare heights in the desert, destroyers have come, for the sword of the Lord devours. From one end of the land to the other, no flesh has peace. They have sown wheat and have reaped thorns. They have tired themselves out, but profit nothing. They shall be ashamed of their harvests because of the fierce anger of the Lord. That's what Jeremiah was waiting to hear. God begins to explain to Jeremiah what he sees when he looks at the evil. He says, I see my own people coming at me like a lion. Think about that image for a second. Go back to the National Geographic Channel, you know, all of you who watch a lot of TV. Imagine that lion coming out of the weeds and he's stalking. And it sees something and, you know, roars at it. God says, that's what I see when I look at my people. It's like a lion coming at me. And it, like they're going to try to, you know, take me out. Do you know who's supposed to be the lion? God is the Lion of Judah. But He says, I see my people coming at me like a lion. When two lions come at each other, it is a challenge for dominance. And that's what's happening. God's people are coming at Him saying, we're going to be in charge. We're the boss. And then God says, that doesn't faze me, because they're already dead. Look at that verse. Look at verse 8. He says they're like a hyena's lair. You know what a hyena's lair is? It's littered with bones and carcasses and dead things, and it's gross. And He says, they're a hyena's lair, and the birds of prey are already waiting to feast on her dead body. My people, they think they're coming at me like a lion, but I've already judged them. It's already a done deal. Look at verse 10. He addresses those wicked leaders. He says, my shepherds screwed up. They ruined the vineyard that I planted here. He calls His people His vineyard. And the people he put in charge of it, the shepherds, they messed it up. It'd be like if I planted a few acres with corn or wheat, and I asked someone to, come and watch over it for me. And instead of caring for it, they let loose 100 rabbits into the field, and they ate up all the little shoots that were coming up, and they ate all the wheat and all the corn and everything. Ate everything that was growing. These caretakers, these shepherds, not only failed, but they purposefully made it worse. Look at verse 13. They have sown wheat, but they are reaping thorns. They worked hard, but for the wrong things. And he says they'll be forced to bear the shame of their own harvest. They'll reap what they've sown. This is essentially what God is saying to Jeremiah. He says, you think I'm being lax in my judgment because you can't see what's coming. You think I'm being lax because you can't see into the future. But I've seen the future. And these people are going to be judged. They're a hyena's lair. They're a lion coming at me. And I'm going to take them down. What you've experienced in Anathoth is just a small taste of what I experience every day from my own people. He says, Jeremiah, you got rejected. You got turned out. You got threatened with death. Guess what? I face that every day when my people walk away, turn their back on me. So don't you worry. I will bring the necessary correction. Don't you worry about evil. I will take care of it. Guys, God is righteous. He will always do what's right and what brings him glory. Always, every time. When we see evil in the world, it is never outside of God's sight. Never. There's not one thing that happens in this world that God does not see. Justice will always be done. Always. Either on the cross or in hell. Justice will be served. And whether it's us realizing that God poured his wrath out on Jesus on the cross and that justice was served there, or we decide to serve our own, be served justice on our own in hell, it'll be served. I don't want you guys to worry about what you see going on around you. I don't want you to worry about what evil in the world. God sees it. You can make your complaint, but just know that God already has it laid out. He knows how he's going to take care of evil in the end. That's evil out there. We've been talking about evil out there, you know. Evil rulers, evil people doing evil things. What about our own evil behavior? If you were born again, if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, justice was poured out on the cross for you. Jesus absorbed the wrath of God for your sin. The punishment for your sin has already been handed out, and Jesus took it for you. You know, the people behind every evil act that you see, they have the same opportunity to accept the justice that was served at the cross. They have the same opportunity. No matter how evil, even those dictators that I mentioned, I don't think they had deathbed conversions or anything, but they certainly could have. Same opportunity for all of us. So the question is, have you dealt with the evil in your own heart first? And then we can begin to address what we see around us. In the meantime, trust him. Trust him, because he sees it, and he will take care of it. Evil does not win. Let me pray with you. Heavenly Father, it is disturbing to look at our world and to see what